Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
Hello and welcome to As It Is, a VOA Learning English program. Today, we are talking about something our listeners may have a strong interest in: motivation for learning. Many life coaches and motivational speakers say that the key to achieving what you want in life is to keep motivated. Motivation, they say, is the energy that keeps you moving towards your goals. Simply explained, to motivate someone is to give them a reason for doing something, a good reason. Parents and teachers often struggle with keeping children motivated to study. One way to motivate them may be to show students that what they are learning is useful and valuable. Before we continue, let's talk about some vocabulary words that will help you improve your understanding of our program. One phrase is real-world application. And if something is inspiring, it causes people to want to do or create something or to lead better lives. Awesome and cool are slang ways to say that something is really good. Now let's hear Ana Mateo as she brings us a story on students who took a field trip and how it affected them.
It is a common complaint of students: what they are learning does not have a practical use. The quickest way for students, or anybody for that matter, to lose motivation when learning is to think that it does not have any real-world application, that it doesn't matter. Recently, students at a Chinese immersion school in Washington, D.C., got motivation from an unlikely source: the White House. The White House invited fourth and fifth grade students from Washington Yu Ying Public Charter School to meet President Xi Jinping at the official welcoming ceremony at the White House. Oh, they also got to meet President Barack Obama. But this wasn't just a photo op, an opportunity for two presidents to take pictures with smiling children. Several of these students said that meeting President Xi inspired them to study more Chinese. It gave them the chance to see that what they are learning is useful and can be used in the real world. Maya is a fifth grade student at Yu Ying. She went on the field trip to the White House to meet President Xi and had this to say.
It gives you like a little bit of inspiration that other people can speak Chinese too, and you're not the only one. So.
Maya's classmate, Felix, said that the field trip was cool. He adds that the words of the two presidents were heartfelt.
I went on a field trip to the White House, which was really cool. Xi Jinping and Barack Obama were there, and they gave a really heartfelt announcement.
After returning from the White House, Felix shared his feelings about learning Chinese.
Yes, I love it. It's one of my favorite languages to learn, to speak.
The field trip to the White House also inspired the teachers. Amanda Ingram teaches fifth grade at Yu Ying. She adds this incredible opportunity gave the students a chance to see that what they are learning has real-world applications.
Meeting both President Obama and President Xi was just really incredible. And our students being able to see that what they're learning here at Yu Ying in Chinese is so useful in the world. Was just really inspiring as a teacher.
fifth grade teacher, Teng Shen, is from Shanghai, China. She says opportunities such as this give students a chance to feel connected to China and the Chinese language.
I feel they have more motivation to learn and speak Chinese, and they can feel closer to the country, and they can have more connections to the language they're learning. And it's really meaningful to them.
You are listening to As It Is from VOA Learning English. Welcome back. You are listening to As It Is from VOA Learning English. In the first part of today's show, we heard how students studying Mandarin Chinese got inspiration from meeting President Xi Jinping and President Obama at a recent official welcoming ceremony at the White House. The visit to the White House inspired the children in their Chinese studies, but it also helped them in other ways. You will hear that it was an incredible experience. Incredible describes something that is difficult or impossible to believe, or simply very good. One teacher also uses the expression, come to the table. This means to meet to discuss how to solve a problem or end a disagreement. Now, Anna tells us more about the incredible field trip and how it affected a group of language students.
The visit was good for motivating the students in their language studies. But Ms. Ingram adds that the students were also able to see how world leaders are able to, as she says, come to the table to overcome their differences and work together. This is important, she says, for our country's future leaders.
So they were able to see two leaders of two really prominent and powerful countries coming together, putting some differences aside, and really coming to the table to talk about how they can work together to make the world better. And I think for our students who hopefully will be those future leaders, this was just an incredible opportunity.
A child's worldview can sometimes be simple, and maybe that's a good thing. Felix, the fifth grader we heard from earlier, says the U.S. and China being allies seems only natural.
I also think it's really good that they announced that the U.S. and China should be allies, because they should, because they've been allies for like almost 100 years.
Meeting two presidents from two very powerful countries is indeed an impressive and incredible opportunity. But staying motivated in your goals need not be so presidential. You can find your own ways to feel connected to what you are learning and to find value in it. For example, if you have a child learning geometry, let them measure and cut some wood for a home project. If you are learning to play a musical instrument, find a beginner's group to practice with. If you are trying to save money, open a special bank account where you can see your savings add up. And if you are learning English, visit VOA Learning English as often as you can. I'm Anna Mateo.
And I'm Mario Ritter. Thanks for listening to As It Is. Don't go away. Next, a new Words and Their Stories program talks about idioms for solving problems, followed by People in America.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube, at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is Words and Their Stories. I'm Anna Mateo, and today I'm going to solve all your problems with a silver bullet. If you don't believe me, that is a good thing. We all know that there is no such thing as a silver bullet that can make everything better. But that does not stop us from using the word silver bullet. A silver bullet is a way to make everything better. The belief that there is magical power in the metal silver goes back to ancient Greece. In the stories of other cultures, a silver bullet is the only way to defeat monsters like werewolves and witches. Writer Stephen King is considered by many in the United States to be the master of scary stories. His book, Silver Bullet, is about a man who turns into a werewolf with every full moon and attacks people in a small town. A werewolf is a make-believe half-man, half-wolf beast that can only be killed by a silver bullet. As with many of King's books, Silver Bullet was made into a film in 1985. Here is a bit from the trailer.
Silver Bullet, the last glimmering hope.
Silver bullets also have roots in an early American cultural icon, a famous character everyone knew.
The Lone Ranger!
The Lone Ranger began as a popular radio show in the 1930s.
Are you silver?
It was a hugely popular television show in the 1950s. In 2013, The Lone Ranger was remade into a movie starring Johnny Depp as Tonto, the Lone Ranger's Native American partner. The Lone Ranger was a Texas Ranger, a type of lawman. When his entire team was attacked and killed, he was left alone, hence the name Lone Ranger. In his new identity, he wore a mask. On horseback, he looked for the bad guys in the American West and brought them to justice. In some of the radio and television shows, the Lone Ranger used bullets made from the precious metal silver as a symbol of justice and law and order. The silver bullet was also to remind himself and others that life, like silver, has value and is not to be wasted or thrown away. The Lone Ranger's calling card, or the thing he left behind to identify himself, was a silver bullet. The term silver bullet has its roots in pop culture, but there are other words that are close in meaning. Panacea sounds more formal and bookish. It has Latin and Greek roots. The Latin word panacea means an herb that would heal all illnesses. The Greek word panacea means cure-all. Cure-all does just what it says. It cures all. Cure-all is used often in spoken English. It is not as formal as panacea and doesn't have the cultural or romantic feel as silver bullet, but cure-all certainly does the job. Sometimes silver bullet is hyphenated and used as an adjective, such as in this example. Thinking that more money is going to fix failing schools is a silver bullet fantasy. You just can't throw money at a problem and wish it away. Of course, if something promises to be a panacea, a silver bullet for all your problems, it most likely is not. That's why these terms are often used in the negative form. There is no silver bullet to fix homelessness in the United States. There is no panacea to cure all the world's ills. So if someone wants to sell you a silver bullet to cure all your troubles, don't buy it. I'm Anna Mateo. Let us know if you have a similar expression that means silver bullet in your language. Let us know on Facebook or in the comments section.
I'm Shirley Griffith.
And I'm Steve Ember with People in America in VOA Special English. Today, we complete the story of singer Marian Anderson.
Marian Anderson was born in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, in the early 1900s. She began singing in church. Soon, her rich, deep voice became widely known in the area. Marian Anderson loved opera. At that time, however, black singers were not permitted in white opera companies in the United States. So she performed as a concert artist instead. Her first concert in New York City was not successful. She felt defeated and did not sing again in public for many months. Then her mother became sick. Anderson knew she would have to work to keep her family together. Singing was her work.
In the 1920s, Marian Anderson won two singing competitions. She sang in New York with the Philharmonic Orchestra. This concert was a huge success. She signed an agreement to perform in other cities. Most of the time, only black people attended her concerts. When she was in the southern part of the United States, she was not permitted to stay in hotels for white people. She did not let racial hatred affect her music. Yet she knew she would never be completely successful until she could sing for all people.
In 1930, Marian Anderson received money to study music in London. In those days, Europe seemed to be the only place where a black artist could gain recognition. So Marian traveled to Europe. Many years later, she described her experience there. "I was made to feel welcome, even at a hotel. People accepted me as a person. They judged me for my qualities as a human being and an artist. Nothing else."
In the 1930s, Anderson studied and performed in London and Berlin, Germany. She gave few concerts at first. Then she was invited to give a series of concerts in Sweden. The musician Kosti Vähänen played the piano at Marian's concerts. He said her voice was so powerful that it seemed to come from under the earth. He described it as a voice that overflowed with a deep, tragic feeling. Marian Anderson had her first great success in Sweden. The Swedish people loved her voice. They especially liked the spirituals she sang. Few of them had heard this kind of American music before.
He's got the whole world in his hands, he's got the big round world in his hands, he's got the wide world in his whole world in his hands. He's got the wind and the rain in his hands. He's got the moon and the stars in his hands. He's got the wind and the rain in his hands. He's got the whole world in his hands. He's got the gambling man right in his hands. He's got the lying man right in his hands. He's got the crap shooting man in his hands. He's got the whole world in his hands.
Marian Anderson traveled through the countries of Scandinavia. People praised her singing everywhere she went. In Helsinki, Finland, she sang for the famous Finnish composer Jean Sibelius. He told her, "The roof of my house is too low for your voice." Anderson sang in Scandinavia for 3 concert seasons. She sang for the kings of Denmark and Sweden. Finally, she decided to return to the United States. She said she wanted to test herself in her own country.
News of her success in Scandinavia did not mean much to concert hall owners in the United States. They knew black concert singers were not popular. Anderson was back where she began, singing at churches and small gatherings. She decided to go back to Europe. Again, she was greeted warmly. The famous Italian orchestra conductor, Arturo Toscanini, heard her sing in Austria. After the concert, he said, "She has a voice that one hears only once in 100 years. Toscanini's comment spread throughout the world of music. Finally, Marian Anderson was famous. She returned to the United States and sang all around the country. In 1935, she appeared for the second time at Town Hall in New York. This time, she was a great success.
Marian Anderson gave concerts in northern and southern cities. She firmly believed that her music was the best weapon against racial hatred. At one concert in the southern state of Mississippi, Anderson saw that her singing could bring people together. It had been a long concert, yet the crowd kept calling for more. Marian asked the audience to join her in singing one last song. The people stood. Black people and white people sang together, side by side. The local newspaper described what happened. "Sometimes the human spirit rises above itself, above racial prejudice."
Another incident became famous around the world. Marian Anderson was to sing in Washington, D.C. at Constitution Hall. This concert hall was owned by an organization called the Daughters of the American Revolution, or DAR. The DAR would not permit Anderson to perform in the concert hall because she was black. Many people protested, including Eleanor Roosevelt, the wife of the American president. With Mrs. Roosevelt's help, Anderson was able to sing for an even bigger crowd in Washington. She gave a free concert in the open air near the Lincoln Memorial. 75,000 people attended that concert on Easter Sunday, April 9, 1939. Years later, Anderson described how she felt on that day.
There seemed to be people as far as the eye could see. I felt that a great wave of goodwill poured out from those people. When I saw them, my heart jumped wildly. I could not talk. I wondered if I would be able to sing.
Marian Anderson did sing, and 75,000 voices, black and white, joined with hers. They sang the national song of the United States. Then they listened as she sang another song about America.
In 1955, Marian Anderson was asked to sing with the New York Metropolitan Opera Company. It was the first time a black singer performed regularly with an American opera group. Marian Anderson's presence made it possible for other black singers to become opera singers in the United States.
Marian Anderson received many honors and awards during her life. In 1958, she was appointed a delegate to the United Nations, expanding her job as Goodwill Ambassador of the United States. She received the Presidential Medal of Freedom in 1963. Anderson retired from singing 2 years later. She lived quietly with her husband, Orpheus Fisher, in the state of Connecticut. After he died, she lived with her sister's son, orchestra conductor James DePriest. Marian Anderson died in 1993 at the age of 96. Experts say she is remembered not only for the quality of her voice, but also because of the way she carried out her right to be heard.
This program was written by Shelley Gollist. It was produced by LaJuan Davis. Our studio engineer was Bill Barber. I'm Shirley Griffith.
And I'm Steve Ember. Join us again next week for People in America in VOA Special English.